people who have sickle cell really have borne the brunt of this intersection of racism and healthcare. Even though they're in extreme pain, they will go through the trouble of putting on makeup and putting on good clothes to try to avoid that judgment when they walk in.
Welcome to Genotypecast, a new podcast from Gray Genetics. Genetics isn't always black and white. News stories related to genetics often raise more questions than they answer. On Genotypecast, we bring you insight from genetic counselors. I'm your host, Eleanor Griffith, a certified genetic counselor and the founder of Gray Genetics, an independent telehealth genetic counseling and consulting service.
And almost anybody you talk to who has sickle cell disease can recount their experiences and different instances of being treated poorly by hospital staff, including doctors and nurses, when they go in for treatment.
Barbara W. Harrison is an African-American certified genetic counselor at Howard University. She works primarily in prenatal genetics and serves other patients as needed. She is Assistant Director for Community Outreach and Education for the Howard University Center for Sickle Cell Disease and has also volunteered with the Sickle Cell Association of the National Capital Area, Inc., a community organization, for almost 20 years. Barbara, so sickle cell disease has gotten a little bit more attention in the news lately between coverage of gene therapies for sickle cell disease, and I think the Black Lives Matter movement bringing more attention to health disparities in medicine. What are some of the health disparities that have existed in sickle cell care, and what is changing?
Yeah, so I think the thing with sickle cell disease is that people who have sickle cell really have borne the brunt of this intersection of racism and healthcare. And it's happened on many different levels. So we know that outside of the United States, that sickle cell disease and related conditions affect people of multiple ethnicities. So people of African descent, Indian descent, Italian, Greeks, you know, and so forth. But in the United States, sickle cell disease mostly affects people of African ancestry. And of course, that's due to the forced migration of African slaves through the transatlantic slave trade to this continent. And so when we think about sickle cell disease in the United States, you know, our minds automatically go to people who are Black. But we know what has also happened in this country is this, you know, system of institutionalized racism. And so people with sickle cell disease are right at that intersection. And so when you think about how this affects people who have sickle cell disease, it really affects them in all aspects of how they kind of interact with the healthcare system. So we know that the hallmark system of sickle cell disease is pain. So, and we know that that's predominantly controlled by opioids and, you know, other pain medicines. Mm-hmm. And almost anybody you talk to who has sickle cell disease can recount their experiences and different instances of being treated poorly by hospital staff, including doctors and nurses, when they go in for treatment. So that often people that have sickle cell disease will have a level of pain all the time, but then at times it spikes and they have what we call a pain crisis. And that often will take them to the ER. And so when they get to the ER, they don't visibly look different. They're, you know, they don't have a physical trauma that you can see. And so oftentimes people with sickle cell end up having to sit in the, you know, in the ER for hours and just kind of get overlooked. And then when they are asked, you know, what the problem is and explain they have pain and they, you know, need opioids, because often they know exactly what they need, they are labeled as drug seekers. You know, they're labeled with these very negative terms, which aren't necessarily used if, you know, if they were a different skin color. You know, it's like automatically there's this bias that they're experiencing just by walking into a place to try to get some health care. You know, often they'll say that even though they're in extreme pain, they will go through the trouble of putting on makeup and putting on good clothes to try to avoid that judgment when they walk in. And that's, you know, and that's just horrible to think about, that someone would have to consider something on that level when they just want to get treated.
Yeah. And stories you've heard about this, do you know, like, if they're going somewhere where they've received care in the past and it's documented in their chart that they have sickle cell disease, does that help? Or, I mean, they're probably experiencing this before someone even bothers to look at their chart.
Yeah, I mean, so in some situations, if they have the opportunity to go to a hospital who knows them and a hospital who even within their within that hospital system, there's adequate communication, then, you know, then they get go quite well. But, you right. know, it's unfortunate because even in the best of hospitals, there can be a disconnect between, let's say, the hematology service and then the doctors in the ER.
Right.
You know, and so unfortunately, it's more often than not, you know, that they're experiencing this kind of treatment. And they don't always have the advantage of having, you know, immediate access, let's say, to a doctor who knows who they are and why they're coming in. And then, of course, you know, these sickle cell crises can happen anywhere. It can happen at any time. So you can't always control that you're going to be at home and can go to the place where you want to go.
Right.
And the other thing that occurs is often people that have sickle cell will wait until the, you know, the very last minute. They will put off going to the hospital because of these experiences.
Because it'll be a terrible experience.
Yeah. And they know that's what they're going to face.
Right.
So they will, you know, put it off. I'm not going. And then when they do go, it's almost just a setup for a negative experience because you're going there and you're already at the, you know, you're off the pain scale of what, you know, you're feeling. And then on top of it, you're having to explain this to, you know, and explain what you need to someone who has this bias against you.
Yeah.
So on that very personal level, it affects them.
Right.
And then we know it even affects them on a broader level. When we look, there was an article that came out earlier in 2020 that talked about even the discrepancy between research dollars spent in cystic fibrosis versus sickle cell disease.
I wasn't surprised to read that it was underfunded compared to CF, but I was surprised the degree to which it was underfunded. I think they said 7 to 11 times less, even though sickle cell disease affects 3 times as many people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And part of that is because that discrepancy you definitely see even just within governmental, like NIH funding. Mm-hmm. But then the discrepancy gets even bigger when you talk about private foundation funding. You know, definitely kudos to the CF community who has been able to raise significant funds that has significantly affected the care of their patients. I mean, they actually fund the CF care centers, you know, that are available, and there's well over 100 of them. But with sickle cell disease, we just haven't had that same benefit. And that gets into other, you know, social constructs and things, you know, around what has affected people, the African-American community, that they just haven't been positioned to raise that same amount of funds. And so therefore depend more on federal funds. And unfortunately, the federal funds for the sickle cell centers was ceased, I think, in 2008. And so since that time, it's really caused the care for sickle cell disease to become disjointed, significantly disjointed.
And cystic fibrosis is maybe a meaningful comparison for sickle cell disease, just because they're both relatively common recessive conditions tested for in newborn screening. Mm-hmm. And they're both good candidates for gene therapy because we know what the molecular genetic mechanisms are for the diseases, right? And which is not the case for a lot of different genetic conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, even from a pharmaceutical perspective, you know, there's even before we get to gene therapy, there's been already those discrepancies seen, you know, whereas there's, you know, about 15 drugs and very specific drugs that have been developed for CF, mutation specific. And they certainly has not covered all of the mutations in CF, and that's probably a whole other discussion, but, you know, but they're out there and available, you know, whereas sickle cell, we reached the, you know, number 4 mark, and that only happened in the past year when, you know, 3 were approved.
Yeah, I think you told me before the interview started that 3 were approved since 2019 and only 1 prior to that.
Before that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and people with sickle cell see that, you know, they're aware of this and they feel slighted, you know, by the healthcare system in many ways.
Yeah. What are the positive developments currently mm-hmm. for gene therapy with sickle cell disease?
Mm-hmm. So with the advent of, you know, CRISPR technology, you know, which has really taken us to a better place with gene therapy than we have in the past. And people have, and sickle cell really is an ideal or could be an ideal condition to treat through gene therapy. So there's been quite a bit of activity there. And I think that is certainly for the positive. There's been some trials now for over a year that have used that CRISPR technology, and it's gone well for those participants. You know, it completely can, you know, have someone's life take a complete 180 when these kind of therapies work. You know, the same was true for bone marrow transplant therapy, which of course is also available. So when it works, it's wonderful. You know, when it doesn't work or when you're not a great candidate for it, then that's a different story. Mm-hmm. But certainly those developments have happened. I think it has caused some excitement, but even some cautious excitement in the sickle cell community, because we haven't forgotten the past. You know, we haven't forgotten being neglected. And so it becomes, okay, why are they coming to us now instead of, you know, and you know, just have that suspicion.
Right. And on top of the racism just related to sickle cell specifically, given the history of racism more generally and with research trials in the past, has it been harder to recruit for research studies for gene therapy?
Yeah, often when you talk to people who have sickle cell disease about these type of opportunities, you know, you'll get the response of, we aren't guinea pigs, they're just trying to experiment on us. And that's based on those prior, you know, trials and prior research initiatives that did not bode well or really were not done with the best interests of the community in mind. And it's a bit of a catch-22 for researchers because, you know, we're from good intentions, you know, the thought is, you know, we're trying to bring this to sickle cell. This is some new technology. And, you know, we know that we have neglected you in the past and we're trying to make this difference now and bring this to you. But then that's faced with this suspicion of why us, and try it on someone else first before you come to us. Yeah. You know, it creates that kind of catch-22. And I think the only way to get through that is really building trust with the community. One place that starts is dealing with this issue of the lack of adult care in sickle cell disease, showing the commitment that even if you don't want to be part of this research project, we're still dedicated to you living your best life with sickle cell. You know, we still are going to put forth those efforts to create different treatments, to, you know, create policies that emergency rooms have to follow for people with sickle cell disease. You know, taking those steps is also needs to happen in concert with this renewed interest in sickle cell and, you know, in undergoing these undergoing gene therapy trials and creating those trials. Simultaneous effort to help raise the health status of everybody with sickle cell disease, not just those that might be part of one of these trials.
Yeah. Do you think those steps are happening, or it's just kind of an idea?
I think they're happening. The NIH, the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute has launched the Cure Sickle Cell Initiative. So that happened late in 2018. And it was partially knowing that these gene therapy trials were coming down the pike and wanting to start to develop those relationships and develop that trust early. And so there has been renewed investment in sickle cell disease, for sure. You know, new opportunities for research, for community involvement, not only to elevate the care of people with sickle cell disease in regards to health, but also just in society and strengthening some of the community groups that have worked in sickle cell for so many years and providing them with more opportunities to get more grant funds and so forth to do the things that they need to do on that social level, that can also help to, you know, support and increase the quality of life of people with sickle cell disease. So I think those efforts are there. I think they just need to continue, and I think they need to really be in the forefront, you know, perhaps even more so than these gene therapy trials, to really put this effort of, again, increasing that the life for people with sickle cell disease overall. And in addition, we're also trying to, you know, look to these different therapies to make it better.
If you are a certified genetic counselor and would like to come on GenotypeCast to talk about an issue related to genetics in the news, send an email to podcast@graygenetics.com.
The information contained in this podcast does not constitute medical advice and is also not a substitute for genetic counseling. Neither Gray Genetics nor any of its guests makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Evaluation of an individual's personal and family health history is a crucial part of genetic counseling and any recommendations.